Hello and welcome to our In Conversation with Q5 podcast. I'm Jill Weeks. This podcast is the audio version of a webinar run by Rick Jarvik of Q5 on the topic of hybrid working and the Great Resignation. For the conversation, Rick was joined by two guests, Andras Vishek and Dr. Kim Richards. With over 20 years' experience in HR and organisational development, Andras Vishek is the global CEO, co-founder and head of research at Maven. He is also an expert in organisational network analysis and social capital. Dr. Kim Richards is an organisational psychologist and principal consultant with Q5. She is an expert on the topics of developing leadership capability and talent ecosystems that enable agile and innovative organisations. We have included in the notes copies of any slides which the speakers refer to. Over to our panel.
Really excited to be your host today. My name is Rick Jarvik. I'm a managing partner of the Americas for Q5. And we have a very hopefully thoughtful and exciting topic to discuss with you today about hybrid working and the Great Resignation. What we hope to cover today is explore a few of the kind of key questions that, you know, as we're going through this massive shift in work and how we work together, is that we're exploring some of the key questions that we should be thinking about as we intentionally design our organizations. And then two, hopefully some practical tips and things to think about as you move beyond this workshop. Context for this dialogue, you know, there's a ton being written about hybrid working and the Great Resignation. And there's a couple things that, you know, what is that connection? And I just like to tee it up before we dive into the dialogue itself. One is, we're obviously coming, and this transition has been happening, but I think COVID and being forced to work from home for all of us around the globe, we're coming out of this industrial age where people used to just go to the office without question because that's where the tools were, that's where the machines were, that's where the computers were. And as a way for management, the way it was set up to basically control, oversee our work. But there's been a number of things that a lot of us in the field and as leaders, we've been trying to drive a more equitable and kind of human approach to work, where there's been kind of themes in organizations around bringing your whole self to work, diversity and inclusion, engagement, collaboration, knowledge worker, health and well-being, social awareness, and the role of purpose. And the role of purpose in organizations, meaning that we expect the organization to do more than just make profit. And I think a lot of these things have really come to a head as people have been kind of locked away from each other in the workplace saying, I just don't want a job. I want something more of that out of my life. And there's very serious implications for our organizations, leaders, all of us kind of retain and develop our best talent and all of our talent in our organizations. And I like to coin a phrase that we'll talk a little bit more about that my friend Kim has raised, that the question that we're asking really isn't about hybrid working and the great resignation. To me, that's somewhat of a negative and a false question. It's actually about all of these kind of trends and these factors have actually caused a great awakening, which Kim will talk about a little bit more in a bit. But it's really about the shift to having purpose and the alignment of the organizational purpose and strategy and our own individual purpose and kind of preferences. And that this needs to be really focused around being human-centered and networked. And again, I have two great colleagues and experts here to be able to kind of enlighten us against that. So again, what we hope to tee up today, that it's not about hybrid working, working at home or working at the office. This is about really being intentional about the work that we need to do together or individually. And I'm gonna ask Kim, I'm gonna have you start the dialogue. So how are these common approaches to hybrid working actually contributing to this great awakening?
I think the question about hybrid working is a bit of a surface one, meaning, you know, we might ask, you know, should we be in the office? Should we be remote? Should be some sort of mixture of in between? And I think really if we step back, as you said, there have been trends for at least 20 years I know of that I've been working with organizations on this, that we've been doing hybrid working, digital working. I think more of the question about this is, what is this shift in terms of the nature of the relationship that people have had with their work, with their life, and that's come because of the last 2 years where we've really been in isolation. We've been together with our families, our work lives, our professional lives have collided, and people are really stopping to think, what is it that I want out of my life? What is it that I want to do with my life? And how do I want the role of work and workplace to fit into that? And I think that really is the question that we're wrestling with right now, along with how do I negotiate that then with the people that I work with and with the places that I choose to bring my talents?
Yeah, it's interesting. As it just jump in for Andres, you know, we asked a poll on LinkedIn around New Year's around the impact of hybrid working on work-life balance. And again, I think that's an interesting choice, work-life balance, because we work, it's part of our lives. But you know, everyone said there's been a lot that we've positively gained out of that, right? 80% of the respondents said, interpret that saying a positive impact. Andras, I'm, you know, teeing it over to you on kind of building on this question, like how has it impacted, you know, our work and our organizations?
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, great concepts here. I think, you know, one of the things that we've seen over the past more than 21 months is that, you know, this was sort of like the largest social experiment that you have ever seen. So there has been a realization that allowing people to work from home doesn't necessarily come with a drop in productivity. So that was one of the realizations. On the other hand, you know, research also suggests that some of our personal and professional networks are also starting to shrink, and also that doesn't mean that we're not communicating as much as we did before. We're still communicating a lot, but the way you're communicating seems to have changed. We have much more communication with people closer to us, and much less communication with people who are working farther away from us in other business units, in other locations, in other functions. So how does that all add up? Like, yeah, we are productive on one hand, but you know, there seems to be problems already coming up from people feeling further away from the community, further away from being part of this type of human networks. So I think the questions will come up in the long run in terms of innovation and productivity and what happens with the people who sort of feel to have started to move out of the organization. How can you keep your talent in the organization and all these questions?
So Andres, just building on that for a second is, right, we're seeing in the U.S. at least, you know, Wall Street and the stock market is like it's been record highs. Obviously, in the last 2 days, there's been a little bit of a wobble. But is there a myth around productivity given the you know, the somewhat destruction of social networks? Or, you know, I have colleagues who basically say, hey, Rick, we're making money like we never have before. We're making profit like never had before.
Yeah.
How to answer that question?
No, I think overall, you know, we can be happy because there has been sort of a proof that people can be productive when they're working from home or from anywhere they are. On the other hand, there was this interesting chart that I've seen about how the pandemic impacted productivity. And in 2020, after the first, you know, 6 months, productivity really skyrocketed. So it was even, you know, above the 2019 same month results. So everyone was like super happy and saying like, hey, we're doing a really great job. On the other hand, you had to add up to that, like everyone was really locked up in their homes. They were sort of in stress. I think people were really, okay, what can I do to release my stress? So they started to work more, apart from probably, you know, more drinking. The other thing that you probably see is that after a certain amount of time, and you can see that in the chart, productivity starts to go down because, yeah, you start to, and that's some of the research results that we've seen is that the network of people have shrunken by 16%. And also that after 5 months, if you don't meet a person, then the emotional closeness draws by 80%. So you can imagine that if you don't meet a person face to face, you will sort of feel really distant from that person. That could result in people feeling lonely, disengaged, and then with the combination of work overload, because we're working more, after a longer period of time, people just will feel burnt out. And again, the first person who's going to leave are probably your top talent who can easily find their next workplace. And then there's the other types of challenges that come up if we look at the diversity of our connections. If our connections are focused more on the people closer to us, those will be the people who are doing similar things, are similar to us. So again, the diversity of our connections will drop. And that's also going to be a problem in terms of innovation when you're not meeting up with people in different functions with different expertise who might inspire totally different ideas than the people who and expert communities that you're already a part of.
There's a follow-up question from the audience here that I'll take it up to both of you is, do you think that the shift goes beyond work? I find myself attending more virtual meetings and conferences versus the expense of traveling to attend such as this event. So how do you think this has impacted us both short and potentially longer term?
I think, does it go beyond work? Yes, absolutely. I think we're rethinking, we're awakening to, hey, we have the opportunity to craft our lives and craft the rhythms of our lives, how we connect with people, when we connect with people, whether that's for professional reasons, or whether that's for personal reasons, or some mix of both, just in order to be connected to other people, as Andras talked about, and or to develop ourselves. To the point about the productivity, I think that's a bit of a, you know, hey, we're more productive. It is a bit of a fallacy right now, and a two-way street, in that when we're trying to be productive, and we're pressured all the time to just work, because we can, because we have nothing else to do, nowhere else to go, then we do start to burn out. We cannot focus from a psychological standpoint, from even a neuroscience standpoint of focusing on task and being able to be productive. We run out and we have to do other things. And I've talked to so many clients and colleagues right now in organizations where the stress and the burnout are high, but so is the focus. They cannot focus for very long because of this, hey, I'm trying to focus so much on task and I don't have exposure to new ideas, to new people, to just thinking about personal, professional, whatever it might be. To answer that question and to answer the productivity, it's way beyond just work in life. It's co-crafting what our life is and how those two things interweave and how we can take ownership of the rhythms of that along with our teammates and the organization in which we give our talents.
Yeah, I want to kind of build on that, Kim. In my own personal experience, I used to run innovation for product development and really focus on the disruptive innovation. I think productivity innovation is happening within kind of extending existing products and services. But again, as we all know, part of the magic to innovation is these magic collisions, why there was such open office plans. You wanted to be able to run in randomly to the person at the coffee machine who works in finance or works in manufacturing or works in whatever. And those things aren't happening the same way anymore. Back to Andras, you probably show that on your network analysis that anything outside of your core team or the core people who work is designed around, those kind of relationships are dying on the vine, right? And so you don't have, like I would argue over a longer term, disruptive innovation without being conscious around that is gonna wane. And that's gonna have a bigger impact longer term for productivity and results, et cetera.
Yes, and it's really hard to realize that because we're actually communicating even more. But is it with the right people? That's the question. Are we being intentional about what are the types of connections that we need to be productive in the long run and for innovation and for diversity? So we have to be much more intentional in how we look at our networks and how we sort of build around this.
I'm going to shift over to the mentee and I'm going to be teeing up the next question. And there's been a couple questions in the post about, in the chat, about, you know, just leadership characteristics. So we're going to dive into the leadership bit for a second. But what are the key characteristics a leader or leaders will need to have managing a successful hybrid working world? So I'm going to tee it up, Kim, again. What are kind of the most critical questions that leaders should be asking as we're going through this great awakening? Right? We don't know what the end is. Like, I think people have stopped saying new normal, because we don't know what the end looks like yet, right? So I kind of what are kind of the big questions that leaders should be asking of themselves and their organizations?
I think one of the big questions is what really is your role in the organization and what is truly the nature of work that you can help to facilitate? Not just jobs and tasks, but what's the nature of the work that you can help to facilitate. And I would posit that, hey, we're living in a time that's dynamic. There isn't going to be a stabilization back to a new normal. It isn't going to go back to being completely predictable. We live in a constantly disrupted, dynamic world. And we have to continue to be agile and innovative. And as leaders then, you know, it's think about how does work, the work of innovation, agility really happen? That happens through people. So how as a leader can you then facilitate that type of collaboration, that type of building on ideas, synthesizing ideas, shaping new things, complex problem solving together, rather than just thinking about how do I manage this task? How do I control this type of flow from my department to the next department? You know, I'll give you a quick example. I know in a large web retailer that we all know very well, what happens is they have leaders of the team, but they're not there to direct the job or the tasks or the work of the team. What they're there to do is to look at what is the team doing? What are they coming up against? What kinds of insights do they need? What kinds of new ideas do they need? And their job is actually to go look across the organization, connect with other leaders, connect with other teams, feed that back into that team. And the team leader, quote unquote, is the one who actually rotates every year to year and a half, so it keeps things fresh. The team itself is the one leading the work and working together. So rethinking that role of the leader as facilitating the human networks and the collaboration and the agility and the innovation rather than I'm controlling tasks or work, I think is really critical.
I agree with that on so many levels, right? And what I'll do is I'm going to quickly just post something. This model, it's a kind of work in progress, but as we were kind of prepping for this and kind of summarizing the dialogue that the three of us had, is this is really about designing that future of work and the leader's role in that, right? And it's not just about where one works or my own personal preferences, right? Which need to be taken into account, no doubt, but mm-hmm. It's about this intentional design. And I think, you know, there's these elements that are all kind of connected and need to be connected to for it to work. And the questions that we can ask are around what is the work that needs to get done? Who does it with whom, and then where and how does it get done? And I was just kind of interested too, you know, Andras, in your kind of, as you leverage social network analysis and O&A in this design, what are some of the kind of the tips there that leaders can be kind of asking themselves about, you know, this intentionality that Kim, that you talked about?
Yeah, I think there are so many questions that, you know, we're asking that are not the right questions. Some of them are coming from this false feeling of, you know, being in control of people, if you see the back of the person sitting in front of a computer and these types of problems. But you know, the question is not how many days, for instance, we work in the office. It's in general, what is the role of the office? What do we do in the office that, you know, makes sense to be in one space? And then how do we maintain our culture when our people are working in these micro environments, in their micro cultures? The question is not how we control and monitor what our employees are doing. The question is how do we motivate them to reach their goals and, you know, getting rid of this type of false feeling of being in control that I was mentioning. And also, I think one other aspect that, you know, King was also talking about the purpose and people trying to connect with their own purpose. So again, the question is not which collaboration tool we should use and not about technologies, but the question is whether people can connect with the purpose of the organization and whether they want to collaborate at all. So those are more, I think, the questions that we should be asking.
Yeah, and there was an article, I only caught it at the end of this over the weekend by Business Insider. I think I'm not sure how global that publication is. But the article is basically talking about the hidden resignation. So it's not only people leaving job hopping right now, right? But it's also about this disengagement. We also know why we've kind of been, as an organization, or OD, org design, org development professionals, have been driving the whole connection to purpose, right? The organization needs to be more about than making money. They coined this term hidden resignation, which is basically people aren't as engaged at work, right? Because they're just burnt out. And they're turning down promotions. You know what? I see what my boss is going through, or I kind of know what I just experienced. How can I do any more? How would you guys say, you know, what is the role or key questions that leaders need to be thinking about in that context?
Yeah, I'll jump in with that. I mean, I think it has to do with really thinking again about what is the work, what work can we do together, what needs to be done together, and then how do we actually facilitate people being able to do that work together? And I'm going to throw something in here from thinking about it from a psychological standpoint of we certainly can connect to purpose, we can connect to mission, and what we really want to know is how is it that the people that I am interacting with and or that I do have a close relationship with as I'm trying to collaborate. Note, I don't mean we have to be best friends, but we have a close collaborative relationship as we're working through different parts of what we're trying to achieve. But we're also, you know, we develop the trust and the empathy to work together. Because while purpose and mission are really important to people, I think the reason we really give discretionary effort, we really get engaged, we really come out and work is because I have a connection. I have a connection with Andras. I share some mission, some passion, some ideas about things. And we have a relationship where we can talk about ideas. We can bring things together to fruition. Same thing, you know, where we actually are putting in our effort and our energy on behalf of each other and on behalf of the teams on which we work. So connecting people, mission and purpose, yes. Then also, like, how do we facilitate those types of connections so that we want to give of our energy and time? And then I'm going to say the role of the leaders in the workplace is also to respect the fact that we have boundaries and we have other energy capacity, things we want to put our energy and capacity, other people outside of just our work tasks. And giving people the ownership to work with their teams to be able to negotiate those types of things. You know, I could give an example, but I'm going to let Andras kind of come in here of, you know, even how Rick and I worked on a team prior and how we did just that. The team negotiated how we're going to back each other up and how we are going to really work together to accommodate work life, professional life, all those different things that are happening. But Andras, I'm curious what you would say about this.
I totally agree with you. Actually, I was planning to share very similar thoughts. Obviously, we, I think, on the same page here. But yeah, there's a lot of research on the role of trust in the performance and engagement of people working in virtual teams and in hybrid teams. And I think it goes into those questions that you were mentioning, Kim, like, are we going the extra mile if someone asks us something that, you know, needs to get done, or are we just delivering something minimal? So yeah, if we agree on, we have a shared purpose, vision, and we have a trust, and we connect well, then you're going to have the engagement, you're going to have the productivity, you're going to have people connecting more spontaneously, being more flexible. But if you don't have the purpose and you have people who are not really, it's a more competitive coming from the, you know, multinational environment of competing with each other and ensuring that I'm the stronger one. And, you know, at the end of the day, people work at home, separated, competing, doing a lot of work. They're gonna burn out or just not going the extra mile.
It's interesting. I want to kind of tee up a question that's coming from the audience, but before I do that, I'm just going to share the mentee result. So this is the word cloud. And so this is, again, the key characteristics of the leader. And it's exactly somewhat what we're just talking about. How do you build trust virtually when I know really nothing about you, that my interactions are very transactional? To my distinguished panel, like, what really jumps out to you when you see these results, what the participants have kind of listed here?
What jumps out to me, and this will be no surprise to those of you who know me, is that it's very human-centric. So it really is about getting back to the fact that organizations are groups of people who decide to give of their energy, their capacity, their capabilities by choice together. And so we have to get back to being a little more human-centered as opposed to focusing so much on processes, tasks, results. And by the way, the human-centered part not only includes the people who are working within the organization, it includes the people that we're serving, our customers. It includes the people who are partners of ours in that. But it's about being human-centric again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really heartwarming for me to see this. So I'm really happy that, you know, this is what you all of you feel, because Yeah, empathy, trust, and being human beings who can connect with each other and just make a difference. That's what's happening, and realizing that, you know, we are okay, we are part of a system, an organization, but we are individual human beings, and we can do things together more effectively.
There's a question from the audience. What approaches have you seen to the skill and experience gaps that leaders have taken? You know, and it goes on to say early retirement, but I want to broaden that question and say, you know, are there kind of skill gaps? Because we've learned to manage and lead in a certain way, even though, you know, a lot of organizations have been managing global teams, et cetera. But are there gaps that now are all of a sudden becoming evident because of what we've been living through in, you know, the destruction of trust, the and those sorts of things? So what kind of skill gaps or experience gaps that leaders either we're seeing we need to build going forward to reestablish those connections?
Yes, I see that on there actually staying human and just being able to connect with your own people as a human and with empathy. I mean, it looks like it's more difficult than one would expect. Yeah, just an example, like we do these organizational network mappings, and there was a leader of an IT organization. He was looking at the map and he realized that he didn't really have any connections on personal level with his own middle managers. So he started to do something about it, but because he didn't have this type of skill sets around empathy and how do I just ask people, hey, how are you doing? What's up? They came back to us, these middle managers, and they told us like, hey, well, I mean, something strange is happening. This boss, he keeps asking us to come into his office and he's asking like these strange questions, like, how is your dog doing? And which totally out of the context. And no, it's like, yeah, can we stay humans? Can we just connect and try to empathize with the other person that is there? That's it's something that I think needs to be developed.
I personally found it harder to do so because I know I have 50 or 55 minutes with an individual and there's so much to cover. At times being task-driven, you forget that there's a human on the other side. That's the thing that I'm personally trying to work on. Kim, you were going to jump in there as well.
Yeah, I think there are two things that pop out for me, and I think about it in terms of, you know, some of the jargon. We think about psychological safety. So that's what trust and empathy does. Yes, it is tempting to just be task driven, and we fall prey to that often. You know, we're feeling the pressure, we're feeling a sense of urgency, and yet for us, you know, individually and collectively, to be able to make good decisions, to solve problems together, or to shape new things, new products, new services, new ways of working together, it actually requires some psychological safety where I'm not always being evaluated on a task, or I'm not being scrutinized about, you know, how much I'm getting done or when I'm getting it done, those types of things. It helps us to have those skills to be able to say, Let's figure out how to have a conversation. Let's figure out how to talk to each other about, well, what is it that you do need? How is it that you best work? What are your strengths? How can we put those strengths together? How can we take what work we have in front of us, maybe as a collective group, and divvy that up in a way that plays to the different strengths? I think those are some of the things we have to ask. And I'm going to throw in another one that might seem a bit controversial. We have a lot of diversity in so many different ways, on so many different levels. And sometimes that can have us thinking about things in a way that it can lead to conflict. And so I would say that one of the skills we really need to learn is how to come into these conversations, how to explore divergent ideas, divergent perspectives, different backgrounds, and be able to think about conflict not as a bad thing and now I have to hold a grudge against you and I'm not going to work with you and I'm going to sabotage, you know, different things, but rather how can we go through conflict and let that be a catalyst for new ideas, for new perspectives, for our own growth and development, and the growth and development of others. That is a skill area that we can only cultivate from a human perspective and really getting into the business of how do we collaborate, how do we really work together, as opposed to, again, focusing only on task.
Building on that, Kim, there's an individual that it's about being intentional. What is the purpose of this meeting? And what am I asking the people to do, right? So am I asking people to help me build an idea, or am I asking them to critique an idea? And we all have our own models, but it's about really being intentional. There's a person named by the name of Chris Perez Brown. He's of this company called Upping Your Elvis. He has a set of behaviors called signaling, where you're actually signaling people, how do you want them to respond what you're going to be presenting? My natural mode, when someone comes to me, I'm immediately saying, how can I make this better? Or how will this work or not work? What are the risks? Versus the person's like, hey, Rick, I just want you to help me build the idea. There's a bunch of questions I don't know. But, you know, unless you tell me, I'm coming in with my own kind of blinders on, especially in this environment, which I find is hypersensitive to that, right? I'm running from one meeting to the next meeting. Someone's trying to catch me for 15 minutes between calls. You're right. It's really helpful to have signaling behavior.
Yeah, and also just reflecting on that point, I think one of the skills that leaders need to develop is the way they invite and involve people in discussions. So not because of what you said, we're jumping from one call to the other and it's really task focused, and then we're talking about, okay, what is the purpose of the call, and then we're going through, and then people are just going to the next meeting, and then it goes like, how do you actually invite people to this discussion? I don't know if you ever had this type of experience, but in some cases, when we spent like from 1 hour, we spent 30 minutes on just having people to reflect on the previous meeting, and how are they feeling about the overall context and the goals and the expectations. Things were just like so quickly solved in 10 minutes, which would never have been even accomplished in 60 minutes. That, you know, that's again something, you know, you need to like acknowledge, like sometimes pushing more information and just informing people and giving tasks to people, that's not more effective than involving, asking, inviting them to discussions.
There's another mentee question that we asked, which is basically, how has like work-life balance expectation changed? And I'm going to relate this. You know, here are the results from the team that, you know, basically expectations have radically changed. It seems like, you know, people are more on the towards the, yeah, strongly agree with that statement. I'm relating to a question from the audience. Do we see generational difference in needs and expectations based upon, quote, hierarchy and the expectations of leaders being different from the people who work for them? It's a deep question, right? There's a lot in there.
I'm going to answer it this way. Yes and no. This idea that there is a definitive demarcation in terms of generations and what we want from work or how we think about X, Y, or Z, I'm not finding it necessarily. I have been connecting with and working with people of all generations now, particularly over the past 2 years, and sort of asking them, what are they struggling with? What do they want out of life? What do they want out of work? And honestly, I'm not getting a whole lot of extreme differences in that way. I think where generational differences come into play have a little bit more to do with what context I'm used to and being able to really recognize, oh, this is the context I'm used to, but those parameters don't fit anymore. So now how do I shift that context that I have to understand the new context and then adapt to that? And each generation has a slightly different context in which they've sort of grown up. I think that's where you might see some of the shifts. Although fundamentally, I don't know that there's big differences.
Yeah, I just want to jump in there, if it may be so bold again. It goes back to the question, right? Which is, are we actually designing around how much time do we spend in the office and how much time do we spend remotely, or are we actually designing around the work? And, you know, there were some things like, again, this will be US centric, but there were some US based investment banks, global banks, that said, if you want to earn your salary, you have to move back to New York. And, you know, their competition was like, that is awesome. I'm going to get some great talent out of this because, you know, like that's ridiculous on so many levels to some, right? So I think, you know, there is some things that we're actually learning on. Again, going back to what is the right question we need leaders, any generation, and again, I don't know the kind of brackets of those leaders making those declarations, but I would say it goes back to, why are we a team? Because again, there's definitely some work I'm much better by myself, and that might differ from you, Kim, and might differ from you, Andras, but there's some stuff I need that interaction to make the idea bigger, bolder, things I haven't thought about, et cetera. So that's where I go back to it. Are we asking really the right question on that? And is every generation open to that context that we're coming into? And I think back to your point, Andras, is some of the things we've done is this like informal checkpoints, like getting people to actually air those assumptions I have about work or this project or this task, like that kind of, which you could do going walking between meeting rooms. Now it's virtual, right?
Yeah, and I also see that there's much more difference in terms of personality and personal preferences, like introverts, extroverts, what they prefer in terms of working from home and going to the office. So, and generational differences, you know, do exist because, you know, some people will prefer different tools, might be more difficult to change, you know, your habits around how you communicate, but it will happen after a certain amount of time. But the way, you know, you, whether you prefer chatting with people and working around more people and having quiet time, you know, that doesn't really change. And people are different, so I think those organizations who realize that and can adapt to both and accommodate both type of preferences will be able to retain their talent better than those who just go for the standard approach.
It's a great point. I don't know, Rick, if you were going here, but you know that's a conversation that we've continually had too, not only amongst this group, but in general with organizations and clients is. We used to really think from an organizational standpoint that we had to make things standard and we had to standardize and it had to be one size fits all for various reasons, you know, for fairness, for this, for that. And I would suggest that partly the answer to, as Andras is saying, you know, individual differences and preferences is, hey, how do we not take a one size fits all approach, a standard approach to every living human being in the organization? And instead think about, okay, how can we be flexible? How can we help people understand what their preferences, their needs are? I'm not suggesting then that the organization needs to design a flexible approach. I'm suggesting then that you say, okay, let's leave it up to our teams to really talk about, hey, how can we accommodate those different needs together? Knowing as an individual, I have to give a little in terms of my needs, my preferences, my ways of working, and vice versa. I also then need the flexibility with my team to negotiate I have children and so I have to go pick them up. So no, I'm probably not going to be online, simple as this, at X time to X time. But if we need to do collaborative work, hey, let's find a window where we can do that, you know, together and it works for you and it works for me. I think there's this standardization thing that we kind of have to get out of our heads a little bit and start going to a little bit more of adaptable, agile type of model.
Probably another webinar around kind of goal setting and aligning to purpose, but there's an interesting point from Gary in the chat that he basically summarizes that, you know, arguably the current environment is starkly more than ever highlighting the difference between being a good manager, I might exchange the word leader, versus an average one, and a great one, it's typically in their DNA. A recent Gallup research poll shows that 70% of the variance between the most engaged and least engaged employees was driven by the direct line manager. So, you know, as we kind of transitioning towards the tail end, at least this initial discussion around this topic is, how might we design organizations, intentionally design organizations, the processes, the roles, the teams in a way that allows all of us to do our best work? What are some of those kind of tips that you would kind of set up and what's important for us to think about as leaders of teams?
Yeah, I think one of the things I would like to sort of bring in is that there are actually two different parallel structures within an organization. So you have the formal organizational structure, which is the reporting lines, decision making, task delegation, all of that. And you also have, parallel to that, the informal structure, the way how things actually get done and how people collaborate, share knowledge, and connect as humans. So you actually need both structures to be successful, but the question is not whether, you know, whether the formal one is more important. Do we need managers? Do we need hierarchy? It's not that at all. It's more like, are these two structures aligned, and how can we sort of bring the formal and the informal structures closer? The formal structure is the skeleton, you know, that sort of keeps the you know, things in shape, and the informal structure is the muscles and the nervous systems, which sort of are more fluid and mobilize the organization. So this is why, you know, you need to be more intentional about how you maintain these emotional ties, which are more challenged in the hybrid work environment. And just an example, we've been working with a mobile service provider in Europe, and we identified, you know, the influencers who are the most well connected and trusted and recognized people in the organization through organizational network analysis. And what they did to be able to sort of use the information from the informal network was they invited them to regular meetings to discuss, you know, the expected major changes in the organization, what are the new HR initiatives. On one hand, to get feedback from them, also ideas on how to fine-tune those changes, and also to use their energies to build excitement about these new initiatives. When people are far away from each other, it's obviously really important to be able to capture these underlying energy networks.
Kim?
Well, I was gonna say, I just think it's beautiful, and I love how Andras talks about it. Of one, the formal structure and the hierarchy is for a certain purpose, reporting lines and whatnot is for a certain purpose. And that might be the skeleton. And he talks about, you know, the informal, right, is the nervous system, how things really happen and how they're vital and they come alive. And, you know, from a change standpoint, when we're designing orgs or we're developing orgs or we're trying to change or transform them, you know, we used to have to, you know, do our stakeholder analysis and our stakeholder maps and figure out all the, you know, from a just knowing people and knowing about the relationships. Now we have these great tools that help us identify the influencers and the bridgers and the challengers and those folks who help make the whole organization run and run well by spreading ideas, by communicating, by getting energy around new ways of working, new ways of thinking, new ways of serving customers. And I know personally, I'm probably much more willing, if I'm being completely honest, I'm much more willing to really sit down and have someone challenge my point of view or the way I've been doing things, if I know them, if I know something about them, and I know that's partly a service really that they're doing on behalf of us, is to sort of challenge that way of thinking. And then you can say, oh, okay, wait a minute, maybe I need to think about this differently. And it opens up new ways of doing things. So I would challenge the thought that leaders are specific in a hierarchy, right? Because of the position, power, or the nature of the box that they inhabit. And rather say that what Andras is talking about is these informal leaders who influence, who spread ideas, who challenge our ways of doing things, are really leaders and leadership as well, and think about that a little bit differently than we have in the past.
Yeah, and I like to add to this discussion too, because, you know, again, a lot of this is leaning towards the individual preference, which is obviously important, right? Because individuals make up teams that make up kind of divisions, et cetera. But, you know, to me, is, are people really aligned and engaged, first and foremost, the purpose of the organization itself, or the department, or the team? Are we aligned around what the strategies are? What are the priorities? And then how we design intentionally around the work that needs to get done to achieve that. I think in this world, we need to be comfortable, back to your point, Kim, around standards, non-standards. We need to design something, some framework, and then see what's working and not working and constantly evaluate. I think we don't know yet, you know, and I also want to build on Andras's point around, it doesn't matter what tools you use. It's actually around what is the work to get done and how best does this particular team need to get it done, or these teams need to get it done. And that's something, you know, I think is really important to kind of build in here. Yeah, the individual preference is important because, again, I think there's a lot of burnout. You know, how do we kind of get people to understand what are those priorities? Are we working on the right things? And are we doing it in the right way? Are we learning from, hey, you know, that last project, man, that was like killed all of us. You know, I needed like 3 weeks off. Mental health and well-being was, you know, all-time low. And I think we need to have the courage as leaders and teammates to be able to kind of question that, question how we're approaching a given task or not. There's a question in the chat about, you know, rather than thinking about this as generational differences, is it really about differences from a hierarchical standpoint? You know, the people who actually physically have to go into the office, you know, floor workers or customer service that may or may not need to be in a physical location, people at, you know, the retail checkouts, et cetera. What are these implications of this new world around the Great Awakening, around, you know, building in and designing for organizational fairness? How would you guys answer that question? It's another deep one.
It's a tough one.
I don't know it's about hierarchy so much as what we're talking about, which is the nature of the work, right? It's the nature of the work. Undoubtedly, there are jobs that they have to be in a physical space. That's where they happen. That's what the work is. And then it's a huge topic to get into the fairness of it. But I think it starts with, we do have to look at that. We have to step back and instead of just asking about the policy of you must be in office, you must be remote or some sort of hybrid, it's what is the nature of the work? How can we support those people who are doing those different types of work and being able to, whether it's to get there or to be safe or to have the right rhythm around it or whatever it may be, it's really going back and being, again, human-centric in terms of how we design work and organizations so that we can take into account the nature of the work and the needs of the individual, as well as you pointed out, Rick, then layer over the objectives of the organization. Those, we have to figure out better ways for those three to be aligned.
I would add to this is that, you know, I go back to this, the previous topic, which is the role of the leader. I think it's okay for the leader not to know how, hence why you have a team. What the leader needs to really be is the guardian around what we're trying to achieve, right? And again, that's where, depending on what needs to get done, right? There's different jobs, that's not necessarily true. That's a blanket statement, but the leader is saying, here's what we need to achieve. What is the best way we as a team and individually can achieve that goal? And it's okay that we might try some things, it doesn't work. And different organizations have different cultures, and you know that culture piece is really important. Like where is success? Where does failure? Where does learning come in to some of these places? Right, those are blanket statements, but I think that is something really important. Again, just a fantastic conversation. I always enjoy spending time with you both. We have about 5 minutes left, and what I'm going to ask both of you to do is, you know, what are the kind of final, you know, the one, if you could give one kind of top tip or recommendation as we navigate this Great Awakening, what would you kind of leave us with? So I'll hand it over to Kim first.
Sure. I mean, I think it really does go back to the role of leadership in the organization. And I would say, you know, let's start to figure out how we can craft things together. How can we get into conversations with each other as a group, as a team, one-on-one, whatever it is, to really think about how can we make our workplaces, whatever environment that takes place in, but how can we make our workplaces better suited both for individuals and at the same time for us collectively to be able to do collaborative work and to be able to support the mission and the purpose of the organization. But it's get in and have conversations. Rick, you just said it. It's, we don't have to have all the answers from a top-down standpoint and impose those on people. We can, to use Andrasha's word, we can involve people in the conversation about that and really mine new ideas, harness new ideas from it.
Thank you, Kim. Andras, your closing kind of top tips.
Yeah, I think in general, just being intentional about connecting with your people is my general message, and then going deeper. So you can use data to understand how networks of trust and collaboration are changing over time in your organization. Just as, you know, doctors use MRI, you know, leaders should have, you know, some kind of diagnose on what's happening. The second point is involving Kim said, involving people, involving your influencers, because it would be great to continuously involve everyone, but being able to pinpoint those people who are the most influential and continuously using them or involving them to manage the change and uncertainty. For instance, one of the things you can sort of involve them in is redefining the role of the office. And then that's the third point, actually. And Rick, I don't know if you can jump to that slide where we're showing the different types of interactions. So yeah, there's research from Rob Cross on you know, which type of interactions work well in person, so in the office, and which you know, interactions are just fine in virtual setup. So you can use this type of information to plan like what activities you keep in the office or you keep virtual. And then the fourth point is just having focus on identifying those gaps in collaboration, the silos, where the connections which are missing and are gone and would be crucial to keep innovation and productivity alive. So those 4 points, I think.
Team, this is fantastic. There's probably four to five major kind of takeaways, you know, there as far as the conversation. So, you know, Andras and Kim, again, I thank you so much. Participants, I thank you so much for joining us today and engaging with us in the chat. If you want to learn more, I can definitely help you connect you to Andras, Kim, and myself and the rest of the Q5 team. Again, I wish we were face to face and we would have continue this over some light beverages, if you will. But again, I always learn a lot from you both, and just thank you so much for your insight and time today.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information on how Q5 can help you design, develop, or implement your approach to hybrid working, please email info@q5partners.com. And do look out for the other episodes in this series, which are available on the Q5 website. Thank you and goodbye.